You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reformed book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
Woo! And we are joined by Claire Kingsley. So, massive fangirl moment here for a moment that we have Claire Kingsley, the amazing Claire Kingsley, on with us to talk about Obsession Falls and all kinds of amazing things. Brand new book out. Anybody who's been watching us before knows we're the Stalker Sisters. And enough about us. They don't need to know about us. They're here for you. So, Claire,
yes,
welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And tell people who are watching who might have been living under a rock and don't know who you are yet, how would you describe your books? If somebody's brand new to you, what should they expect as a reader from the stories that you write?
So I write contemporary romance. I would say I do write a lot of, lately especially, a lot of small town romance, small town settings. My latest series is a small town romantic suspense. But I also write a lot of very, oh gosh, I should have prepared a better answer because now I'm just going to ramble. That's okay though. I would say my books are very, they're heartwarming, they're layered, they have big happily ever afters, a little bit of heat, and in the latest one, a bad guy.
It was great. The suspense was wonderful.
Yes. And awesome. We know that this is new territory for you, people who have been reading you for a while. This is kind of new territory with romantic suspense.
It is a little bit. I've said before that I kind of leaned into romantic suspense in this series. My previous series, several of them have suspense elements, like the Bootleg Spring series that I wrote with my bestie, Lucy Score. Definitely some suspense and mystery in that series. Even the Miles family, which is another small town sort of family-centered romance, and the Bailey brothers, another small town series. Those have suspense elements in them too. I mean, there's like abductions and arson and drug dealers and, you know, like bad guys and stuff. So I've written that stuff before. Like one reader in a comment on social media was like, Claire, what are you even talking about? You've written all, like, and like suspense is new. And they're like, no, it's not. Thank you for keeping it real, reader. But I kind of, like I said, I leaned into it with this. So I really just went for it. I went for it, not just in the story, but like in the branding as well, which that was more kind of where I was going out on a limb a little bit to see how that did in the marketplace. So,
yeah, well, we are all romantic suspense junkies. So I was super excited because I've read everything that you've written. And I was super excited, one, because the Havens, and then, you know, the little romantic suspense element. And I was like, okay, this is new. You know, it's heavier. It's got a much heavier intentional leaning into it. So where you do see a little bit of in other books, this one definitely has much more of an intentional leaning towards it. So I would say it's a little bit of a, not so much a departure, but an advancement on what you've been doing. It just adds another layer.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you.
Yeah. That's another layer, which is really cool.
I like to think of it as kind of widening my lane. Like my lane, you know, you start out as a writer and you're kind of here, and I've just been kind of gradually widening my lane a little bit to see, partially just for my own creative need. I think that's where a lot of this kind of dive into romantic suspense came from. I was really looking for ways to, like, how do I get excited about this series? And I was struggling with that. And once I started thinking about kind of the suspense angle, that was what hooked me to want to write it. And I really wanted to want to write it because I know my readers wanted it. And I didn't want to kind of set up this, because this is, for readers who don't know, this is kind of it's a spinoff series from the Bailey brothers. So it's related. You could read it independently. You don't have to read the Baileys first. I mean, but why wouldn't you, really? But anyway.
I don't know, because they're amazing. Because
Thank you.
Well, they're amazing.
But anyway. That was kind of, I needed to find a way to get excited about it. And thinking about the suspense angle was what did it. That was what really made this come to life for me.
I love that. And it is a brand new series of The Havens. And like I said, I go all the way back talking about just, you know, backlist and reading you were the first contemporary small town romance author I read. I had before then I had read PNR and I had read Romantic Suspense. I was a late bloomer in romance. I didn't read my first romance novel till March of 2020. And then I was like,
yeah, you're not alone. There's a lot of readers like that. Yeah.
And I dove in full force, whole bunch of PNR. Then I discovered Romantic Suspense with Brittany Shaheen. And then I think it was Roland's book came up on a splash screen on my Kindle. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. So then I was like, okay. And then I dove into the Miles family and was like totally hooked. We'll never get over Cooper. Cooper has a very, very, very special place in my heart. He is absolutely amazing. All right, y'all, if you don't know.
A force of nature. He is a force of nature and continues to be a force of nature. I wrote that book and I think, geez, 2018 now. I mean, it's been years at this point. And he's still in there. Like, he's still around.
Yep. Michelle will make sure. Michelle will make sure that he's around.
He ain't going nowhere.
He's my answer for how I found you. Was Michelle kept talking about the Miles family and more specifically Cooper.
Yes.
Cooper.
Yes. Cooper is Cooper is life. He is just one of those characters that he just brings so much to everything he's in. And he seems like the dude bro that's just, you know, shallow and over, and he's not. And he is honestly one of the deepest characters that I have read. And it's just amazing. Cooper. Okay, I'm just gonna talk about Cooper all night long. No, we're not gonna have a Cooper fact. But
he would say that's completely appropriate.
He would. He totally would. But you were the first non-romantic suspense, non-PNR author that I read, and I just kind of went way down the rabbit hole. Read all the Miles family, and then I went back and read Bootleg and Jetty Beach, and then a whole bunch of others, and then came back to the Baileys after I read the Miles family again, and then the Baileys. So then when I heard, like, the Havens become a central part of the Baileys. And so I'm gonna ask the question right off the bat now. Did you always plan to write a Haven series, or was this just kind of percolating?
No, I always plan to write a Haven series.
Yes.
Someone would maybe be able to dig up social media posts for me from while I was writing the Baileys, or I would have denied that publicly. Or been vague, you know, and I was lying. Sorry.
I love it.
That was always the plan. I can remember in probably late 2019, the Bailey series goes way back, actually. I wrote a version of Grace and Asher's story. That's the first two books. In 2017 or something. And I was pitching it to traditional publishers. And so I kind of had to put it on hold because I was pitching it. So I obviously couldn't do anything with it for a while. And that never went anywhere, which turned out to be good. I'm glad it didn't go anywhere. But in the meantime, I wrote the Miles family. And so I had so Grace is connected to the Miles family and she's the first Bailey Brothers heroine. And I don't know, that was how that all kind of came together. When it was getting to be time to actually write the Bailey Brothers, I had a version of their book and I knew I didn't like it. It wasn't good enough. It wasn't right. It was fundamentally flawed. And I sort of realized that. And at first I kind of thought I was going to just, you know, revise it a little bit. And I ended up pretty much rewriting the entire thing. But, from that point, that was when I started really digging into, okay, what is this town? Like, I wanted to make the town a character, you know, in a way. Mm-hmm. And I had learned a lot about doing that. I had been writing with Lucy and, you know, she's so good at that. And working with her, I just learned so much. So I really wanted to kind of take everything that I had learned. So I came up with the idea of this feud, like these two families are feuding and I thought that'd be really fun. And then it was like, bing, 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 like, oh, the next series will be the other guys, the other family.
I love it.
And so I always sort of knew that would be the case. I didn't know much about what I was going to do with it or what their stories would be. I just didn't really worry about that too much. But yeah. So anyway, that's my rambly answer. I'm super rambly, so sorry in advance for taking 5 minutes to answer simple questions.
I was going to say, have you met us? It's kind of the way we live our lives. it's like, I'll get to the answer eventually. But in the meantime, yeah. I'm going to tell you all the things because you all have to have the backstory.
Yeah, I'm a novel writer, not an essayist. I can't do short.
There you go. And it's true, though, because there's the dog. It's true that, you know, you do have to, you find that backstory because a lot of it leads into something else. Miles leads mm-hmm. into Bailey's, leads into mm-hmm. the Havens. And I remember mm-hmm. you saying that in the Alphas group, you're like, no, the Havens are just there to help advance the plot. And, you know, Bailey's.
I think some people were like, oh, would you ever write a Haven series? And I think I would always just be like, I don't know.
Right?
Let's see if they talk to me. And in my head, I'm like, yes, I probably will.
I love it because I always thought these guys are just a little too developed, a little too there. And the feud was so amazing with the way it pulled the stories through that I was like, God, I hope she's planning something. And
well, and, you know, I knew I had really set it up. Like I said, when I was struggling to write Obsession Falls, I, you know, it was like, okay, here we go, Havens, let's do this. And I was just stuck. I was really, really stuck. And I just had this feeling of like, what if I can't write them? What if I can't do it? That would be just terrible because there's so many signs pointing to them getting their own stories all throughout the Bailey series. I just felt like, oh, way to break reader trust, you know, like, come on. So, but I mean, obviously I did it. So there we go. Right.
And you know, it's interesting working with authors a lot. There's always something that it's like, there's a click, something clicks. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying mm-hmm. with the Baileys, you had to go back and find that click mm-hmm. element, the catalyst. And yep. there's a kind of the romantic leaning into the romantic suspense yeah. with the Havens, I think is just going to work through beautifully because it's 6 years later
mm-hmm. from the yeah, end it's of 6 years Baileys? Later from right. yeah yep
okay. So it's had time to the feud and everything else exactly. and yep so I everything know. Kind of,
yeah, a lot. There were some people who were like, there were some readers, I think, that I saw on social media who were worried about that when I said, you know, because people were asking, is this book before this book came out? Like, when does it take place? And I just said, well, it's 6 years later. It's, you know, there's a bonus epilogue for the Bailey series and it's yep. after that. And most people were fine, right? Like, oh, yeah. cool. And then some people were like, what? 6 years? What's been going on in 6 years? And I'm like, well, trust me.
Life.
But I wanted time for the feud to calm down because yeah. like the feud is not a thing anymore right. in the new series. Right. And I didn't want it to be so fresh that mm-hmm. it would seem like inconsistent if I'm not doing stuff with it. Cause you'd have to imagine that, you know, right after the end of the Bailey Brothers series, you know, life, it would have taken time for life yes. to kind of chill out for everybody and for them to get used to, you know, not hating each other and being friends and some of them being family. And so I wanted there to be time for that to just kind of
yeah.
have happened and yep. for that to be realistic. Because what I don't want is for someone to pick up Obsession Falls, never having read the Bailey Brothers and be like, I'm missing so much. You know, I didn't want it to read yeah. like that.
And that well, I think, oh yeah, because Julie... This was the
I read the Miles family, so right. I haven't read the Bailey Brothers, and I 100% was in my car. That's basically when I can read now. Constantly, I was like finding places to go, like so I could listen to the book. So
yep, we were driving.
Yeah,
back
I was
from
perfect. You did very right. well.
We were driving back from Indianapolis, right? And we put the audiobook in and yeah. listened to it on the way back from Indianapolis to Cincinnati. And it was just like the car was quiet because we just wanted to hear the story. And I've read it.
The fastest drive.
It was. It ended way too soon. So then, of course, I had to listen to it on the plane on the way home, too. just to relive it again, but I really feel it's just a perfect entry point. And giving it that
Good.
buffer of the 6 years does make it a really easy entry point to somebody who has never read any of your books before, or read them a while ago, hasn't read anything in a while,
doesn't
hasn't
remember
read the Baileys. It just
exactly.
gives that slide in. And we were talking about like how we found you and different things, and leading into that, I know Susie and I were talking the other day, because Susie, what was the first book that you read by Claire?
Was
it The Christmas Grump?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yay.
Yep. So another like a clean entry point. And
yep. And then from there I went to Grace and Asher.
Oh, God. That's
and
another
I
one.
I didn't read Obsession
cry.
Falls because I didn't do my homework. She said, Kingsley. And I was like, okay, I'll just pick a book. But then I realized I had to read a book that they.
Like I said, sometimes we're off the rails.
This is the one that you were like, what are you doing to me?
Which one?
What's that?
Oh, Susie. Yes, that's right. So you started reading. Right, but I can't think of the okay, the title's right behind me. Yeah, Fighting for Us and Protecting You. Yes. Yeah. So started reading them and she messages me and she's like, what the hell are you doing to me? She's like crying at her desk, and I'm like, welcome to my world. And that is one. Somebody even asked in another group yesterday, they're like, I'm looking for books that are going to just tear me apart, bring me to tears. And I'm like, oh, have I got a couple books for you? And that was one of them. I was like, just be prepared though. This is a series binge. You're going to read these two books. You're not going to stop. You're going to want to go through all of them because it has that ongoing element where it just pulls you through it. You got to find out what all the brothers are up to. You got to see what's going on with the feud. The squirrels are enough to pull you in.
The squirrels. Oh my gosh, the squirrel thing, like, so took on a life of its own. It's absolutely hysterical. You'd think that I planned for that to be the thing that it was, and it kind of did, but not really. And like the squirrel protection, like the squirrel protection squad thing, like that was so unplanned. Like, my favorite things are when really random stuff kind of takes on a life of its own as I'm writing. I'm really an intuitive thinker and writer. So what it means is my brain is doing all sorts of things in the background that I'm not aware of. And then it just comes out. And that was one of those things, this like them forming a squirrel protection squad. And like, it's so, so ridiculous. But like, readers are just super into it. And like,
I love it.
I don't even know.
The newsletter today was perfect.
Yes.
Wasn't it today's newsletter? I had to read
with the article from the
yeah.
Yes. All right, so pronounce the name of the town, because there's always a lot of controversy about how you pronounce the name of the town where they live.
Tillicum.
Perfect. There we go.
Tillicum.
You
yeah,
heard
okay,
it from
so
Claire.
You've heard it from Claire. Tillicum. Tillicum is a Native American word. It probably originated in Chinook, but maybe not. I might be wrong about that. And it means a variety of things. It can mean home. It can mean the gathering place. It can also mean the people, which kind of has family connotations. So my late husband was Native American, and so my kids are, and I'm not, I'm super white, but anyway, but I wanted to use, I just really liked that word and that name. And so no, it's not an attempt to be low key dirty. That's not what I meant. In fact, I have to be honest, like, people are like, you had to have known people would think it was pronounced to like home. And I'm like, no, I really did not, because it's a real word that I know how to pronounce. And so it didn't even occur to me that people would pronounce it wrong.
I didn't think of that until somebody mentioned it. Like, is it pronounced this way? And I'm looking at the word going, why would you think? Oh, okay. I can see why you would think that, but why would you think that?
I know. No, it's Tillicum. Yeah.
Perfect.
Tillicum.
And it's perfect. The meaning of that word for the way you've developed the stories, it's that little small town. It's absolutely perfect. Julie, your screen is just going to, I mean, every time I look at you, I'm not looking at Julie right now, because every time I look down at your screen, I'm cracking up with the squirrel behind you. And you got to get the squirrels in there.
It looks like the squirrel is about to attack her.
What is it doing? No, I'm not looking at the squirrel. I have enough trouble staying focused. Now you're literally bringing a squirrel into this. I have enough squirrel moments on my own. We don't need to bring the squirrels in. So, Ron, how did you find Claire? Because we've been talking about this also, how you found her and what you read.
Well, Blue Water Billionaires, I think, because I'm trying to remember whether I read that first or whether I read the bootleg books first.
Oh, so good.
It was very, they were, whichever way it went really, really fast because I hoovered them all. But I'm pretty sure that it was Blue Water Billionaires, the mogul and the muscle.
Yeah.
That's
which I loved. I loved it.
I think that introduced so many of us to so many authors because that's how I found Lucy and Catherine and Pippa, who I went on to binge their entire backlists because of that. And
totally the point. It was like partly why we did it. You know, we wanted to support each other.
I think it's absolutely brilliant because it's a great way to have something that's standalone, but it has this little series connection with the friends, the uniqueness of them being the women being the billionaires. I love because it's so different from everything else that I've read billionaire wise was perfect.
Yeah.
And then this jumping off point into all of these other amazing authors, it was like, that's amazing. It's brilliant. Yeah. So I think
I think that the depth of each of those books, by comparison to some of the other series, with the motivation of promoting each other, I think that Blue Water was really, really well done.
Yeah.
And it kind of, for me, it sets the standard for that type of collaboration. Is that they are, the characters are well developed. That it reads like a series written by a single author. Mm-hmm. With all the quirks of all of you guys that we love. So, I mean, I think that it really does set a unique standard.
It's awesome. It's really cohesive versus an anthology set where it's a bunch of authors who, and I love anthologies because I can find a lot of different authors, but the cohesiveness of it really kind of drew me into all of their stories. And then it's like, well, I love the way this develops. And then every now and then some of them will pop into different stories too. Which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I think Pippa does that really well. But I love that. So yay for Blue Water Billionaires. So talking about, did we talk about what our favorite books are?
I don't know.
I think we all have different. Cooper's my favorite. My heart belongs to Cooper, but between Rewriting the Stars and Obsession Falls, there was a depth to both of those books that pulled through the town and everything together that I think, I have it over here. Rewriting the Stars. Rewriting the Stars is really girthy.
It's
it is.
Really, really thick book.
Yeah. That there was a lot of story to tell.
And it's amazing. And the cover is stunning. All right. Let me see if I'm going to do this without like tearing everything apart here.
Watch. Little Mr. Peen's probably going to fall off.
Yeah. He might have to sacrifice, but.
He's going to tumble.
It's worth it. There he goes. Timber.
Oh.
That's the cover for Rewriting the Stars.
It's beautiful. Oh, it's beautiful.
I love it so much.
Yep.
And it's one of my favorite covers. It's just gorgeous. So I had to show everybody that one. If you don't have it, get it. This whole series is stunning. I loved when
read them in order, please. Read them in order. Read them in order. Read them in order. Please read them in order. I beg of you to read them in order.
I get a kick every time someone comes into the group and they ask the question of, oh, I just got the Bailey series or I just got the Miles series. Do I have to read them in order? And it's like Nikki has like this radar for those posts.
Oh my
God. She's
like,
what do you mean? Of course you have to read them in order.
Why
would
you
not read them in order?
she's super traumatized because, and I say that tongue in cheek, I don't mean literally, with respect to people who have suffered actual trauma. No, she, like, there was a TikTok last year, I think, about book five, Chasing Her Fire.
Yes.
You know, Logan and Kara, that went viral. And super cool, right? It's neat. I mean, I didn't do it. Like, it was a reader. And, but tons of people went out and just bought that book and just read that first. And so they missed all the buildup because from books two, three, and four, you see that couple fighting constantly. And it's amazing. I'm sorry. I know I wrote it. That's super conceited, but it is.
No, and it's so true.
Own it, girl. Own it.
And yeah. So Nikki especially is just like, how could, like, it just hurts her soul that there's so many people that only read that one book and they missed the buildup to it. Yeah. And then they didn't read Rewriting the Stars. I mean, maybe they did. I'm sure lots of them went back and read the series, you know, I'm sure they did. But there are some who didn't. And she just is like, it just kills her. You know, some books are written to be enjoyed. Like, you could totally enjoy any of the Dirty Martini Running Club books. You could just dive into whichever one looked fun to you and you could read it and it'd be totally fine.
Yep.
But you know, the Bailey series, I really wrote it intentionally to be read in order. So I can't control what readers do, you know, that's out of my hands and into the world, and that's fine.
Yep.
But it's freedom in order. They're better when you read in order.
And they're even better if you go back and read the Miles family first, because then you get a little insight into
the background.
Grace and kind of builds through there.
That's what Michelle told me.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, did you read the Miles first? And I'm like, now you tell me. I'm like halfway done with the book.
But you can jump in with the Baileys from the first book there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just, and you can go back and read the Miles family afterwards, and then you're gonna be like, oh. Okay, because you'll see little things, but you can definitely jump in. And I like that the different series have the different jumping in points, because if you read the Miles family, you can jump right into the Baileys, but you don't really have to have read the Miles to jump into the Baileys.
Exactly.
And the same thing with, you can jump right into Obsession Falls without having read the Baileys. It will just be, you'll have a different background, different perspective if you've read the Baileys first. But
exactly.
So I love that Obsession Falls has become this jumping in point for you, bringing in new readers. We're already seeing a lot of cross-pollination in the groups that we're in that focus more on romantic suspense readers, where there's crossover and people are like, oh, I had no idea. And we're like, well, go read it now, because you start to see these weaving in of, well, I like small town, but I like a little bit of suspense. So it's like, well, then you're going to like this. And I know there are some readers who are like, I only read this. And I'm like, cool. But I think more people are like us, where we just kind of flit in and out the different subgenres and binge an author, binge a series, and then tell the world you have to read this. So I love that offers that. So we pulled some quotes, because I think a great indicator for me, at least, of kind of a little teaser for books is the quotes. And I know, talking to different authors, they're like, they don't know what somebody is going to really relate to, what's really going to draw their attention. And then when they hear it, they're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that to be, or I really like that that became. So, all right, let's pull a few quotes real quick. And I highlighted this one, I think, a couple times, like, looking at it going, I keep coming back to it. And it's just, my life hadn't followed the path I'd expected, but I'd landed exactly where I was meant to be. And I'm like, that's so relevant to so many people for so many reasons. And it can be taken completely out of the context of the book and still be, people can look at it and go,
yep, I felt that. I heard that. That. So for me, that was a really good one. That's a really important one.
Ron, you're next on my screen. We're just going to kind of go around.
Okay. This is in honor of Julie.
No.
May it rest in the land of abundant nuts. Sayang. Cracked a smile. I about died right there. I didn't even care that he was smiling at an unintended nut joke. like a 12-year-old boy. That smile could be my undoing.
That was so great. And the squirrels are wonderful. And I read that, and of course I was like, well, I'm glad I wasn't drinking anything when I read that scene, because I wouldn't sprain the Kindle. There were a couple others where I was like, damn it, now I gotta go get something to wipe off the screen. So there's a really nice blend of the suspense, but there's a really, really nice element of humor in it too. Josiah's deadpan is pretty epic. Julie, what'd you grab?
Half the time I can't tell if you're being sarcastic. You have the ability to deadpan everything. Assume sarcasm.
So perfect.
I love some sarcasm.
so perfect. Susie, what did you grab?
I could stand in the gap for her, protect her from the world. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I couldn't protect her from every hurt that might come her way, but I could do my best to keep her safe, not just her body, but her heart. It was my calling.
God, I know, right? Okay, so I'm going to ask kind of an off-the-rails question here. Did you always know Josiah was going to be first?
I did. It's probably one of maybe two or three things that I was in my kind of original, very loose plan for the Haven series that I kept. And I don't know why I knew he would be first, or I don't know why I even continued with him as the first. I just, especially because I did get so stuck initially. But yeah, he was always kind of going to lead the way. And I don't even have like a good reason for that. It just was. It just was.
I think it was perfect. Perfect jumping off point. And
I got into it, I really wanted to create a book one that was like easy to love, you know, like, how do I explain it? I don't know. The grumpy sunshine thing is just absolute catnip to me. And so I love it and I love writing it. And so I was like, you know, he fit the bill for that big time. And
yeah,
I just wanted to lead with something that was like, I don't know. I think that I've heard enough readers that are like afraid of the first Bailey Brothers book because it's a duet and it's kind of intense. And so I'm like, you know, I want to lead with something that's a little softer, you know, there's some suspense, but it's a little cozier. Yeah. And if I'm going to go with some more intense themes, I can tackle those in later books, or more intense characters, I can tackle those in later books. But yeah, so Josiah just fit that. Like I can roll with the grumpy, stoic man.
And it, perfect. Because yeah. There's how many brothers?
Six.
So we're gonna get a lot of,
you know, like every small town has lots of large families with hot single brothers. It's totally normal. Just, you know, move along. It's fine.
I love it. Normal.
Do you have a list of the towns? You have a list of those towns? Right?
can we find a real one and all move there together? Right. That'd be great.
Yes. Create a little town. You tend to write in these worlds that you create. So you've got a couple of different ones. Tilikum's one of them. And in that world, we have Tilikum, we have the Baileys and the Havens. We have, all right, how's the winery pronounced? Here's another one.
Saelishin.
Saelishin, okay.
Saelishin.
What is it? I'm sorry.
Saelishin, the winery.
In the Miles?
Yeah, in the Miles.
Look at me, I remember that was years ago.
But that's always a question. I'm like, is it Saelishin?
I know. I actually, it's another Native American word. I kind of regret using it because it's hard to pronounce. People don't. And I should have thought of that when I wrote it. Or I guess I kind of did. And I was like, it'll be fine. And then it constantly comes up as a question, you know, how do you pronounce it? I'm like, dang it. Because it's not necessarily intuitive because it looks like Saelishin, but it's Saelishin.
Keeps the dialogue and the discussion going. The more people ask, the more you're like
why not?
Hines family.
Right. Like what? Yeah. Yeah.
So you have those, so they're in that, you've got them in that little world. And then you have other worlds that you've created, because I don't remember, Bootleg and Jetty Springs overlap.
Basic premise is that it all exists in the same world.
Okay.
And so, like, when Lucy and I were writing Bootleg Springs, we just wanted a couple of just Easter egg references to our other series we had at the time. So there's a Blue Moon reference and there's a Jetty Beach reference. There's no like crossover actual, like Jonah Bodine does not show up in the Jetty Beach series. Like I had written those like way before that. Right. But we just made him having lived there just as a shout out to my series. And then we had another character come from Blue Moon, and we just did that, like that doesn't appear in any of the actual Blue Moon books, but we both just wanted to have, like, I wanted to have a shout out to her series and she had a shout out to mine and the characters that we wrote, so that was why there's a little bit of crossover there, those mentions. But like I've had mentions of the different places. I just like to throw those Easter eggs in so much. It's so fun. So like there's times when different characters, like there's a character in the Miles series who goes to couple characters in different points go to Jetty Beach. So it exists, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me about the timeline and where, when it all, what takes place when, because please don't ask me to do math. Because I'm sure I'll do it wrong.
There are, the time-space continuum is very fuzzy. Fiction, and people just need to accept that there is a fuzzy time space continuum in fiction and get over it. Because if you're tied to math, then just go read nonfiction and you'll have your timelines. But math is a thing. I
totally believe in fuzzy.
That kind of stuff is really tough for me because the way that I write, I don't plan things extensively before I start. So, you know, I don't do things like, create like a town map and know where all the things are before I start. I'm like, I don't know what's there. I haven't written it yet. I don't know how old that guy is. I haven't written him yet, you know? But then when you start writing like in the same town or with crossover characters or, you know, like this series that kind of spins off from the Baileys, it's like, wait, how old would that character be? And how much time has passed? And how old were they in their book? And how much time? Wait, and their book started then, but then before that, they were this age. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure I did it wrong. I don't know.
And you know what? People who call things like that, I'm kind of like,
You are so smart. You're smarter than me.
Yeah, that's what I need to look at. Good for you. You math better than I do. That nobody's going to argue with that anyway.
Like some people are just wired that way. Some people are wired to where they want things to be really consistent. They want to know the details. It's just how their brain works. And that's, I get that. My brain is not like that. I do my best to try to make, like, I don't want any glaring inconsistencies. I really, really try very hard to avoid. But like, if I've got, that was another reason that I pushed this series ahead in time, because I'm like, oh man, if I'm writing something that's gonna interfere with something that was happening, like, in book 4 of the Bailey brothers, I don't want to have to deal with that. The other reason too is the baby math, because I know the Baileys are all having like a million kids, and I didn't want to have to be like, okay, so the Bailey series bonus epilogue has all these kids in it, so how old would they be if the Haven starts 3 years earlier than that? You know, I was like, no, I can't do all that math because I'm gonna get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. And there's really no point to it, because people are going to read it, they're going to enjoy it, and they're going to be like, okay, they have a bunch of kids. I don't want to sit down and figure out the math. I'm going to just trust that they have a bunch of kids, that they're all different ages.
Bunch of kids. Yeah, you're going to run into them here and there, and it's fine.
Right. Yeah. And it's just, okay, just kind of accept that there's a lot of kids running around, because there's a lot of Baileys.
There's lots of Baileys, and they all have lots of babies.
And now we have lots of Havens, and so which leaves even more opportunity for more kids, and it's really like, okay, there's lots of kids. I love lots of kids.
Just kids.
Perfect.
Let's keep going. Exactly. All the babies.
Awesome.
What's your favorite part of creating the world? So we know timelines are the sticky wicket. What's your favorite part of pulling these different books, these stories, these little towns? What's your favorite part of creating them?
I think my favorite part is really when things happen spontaneously as I'm writing, or when I realize that like something that I've put in play earlier, maybe something in the setting or whatever, ends up being really significant, even if I didn't know ahead of time it was going to be really significant. Or when something takes on a life of its own, like the Squirrel Protection Squad. Like, seriously, I'm writing along and I'm writing the scene and it just kind of came out. It wasn't like I was sitting there going, "Ooh, I bet they would form a squad." It just, I had this sort of town meeting going on and I'm like, "What would they do?" And it just happened. And I was kind of like, "Ah, okay, that's funny." And then it just, it clicked and it worked. And it just became one of those like fun little things that can carry through the series. Even though, like I said, that wasn't in my brainstorm notes. Like, okay, I'm going to have them form a squirrel protection squad. Like, right. Things like that. So I like it when that stuff happens spontaneously. It tends to have more impact when it does. Like when I've tried to sort of fabricate things to, I don't know, they don't always kind of like come alive as well as when they just sort of happen.
It feels more organic. It feels more authentic. Yeah. It's just kind of like, okay, well, this happened.
Well, obviously that would happen.
In that town? Yeah, it would.
Yeah, pretty much.
Totally in line with everything I would expect from there. So it was perfect. And knowing that it was kind of just one of those things that was like, oh, okay, brain nugget. There we go. Perfect.
Yeah,
I love that. Yeah. That's awesome. Julie, I've got a list of questions here for totally off the rails. But let's get back on the rails a little bit. Sure. Julie, you had some questions also.
What was your favorite scene or part that you wrote in Obsession Fall?
That's a good question. Let me think. I'm trying to remember it. It's always so hard. I've since written an entire other book. So I'm trying to remember. And I don't want to accidentally say something that's from the book that I haven't talked about yet, because I haven't talked about it. And that could happen. Let's see, what was my favorite thing to write in that one?
FYI, we can delete if you accidentally
get right.
It's bad, right? If I'm like, oh, that thing where Michelle's like, "Stop it, Claire."
Julie's got a button. It's the dump button. It's like, no, stop, pause, delete, eliminate.
Oh my goodness.
She'll just put a big old spoiler sticker on it.
Right? I actually, you know what it was? Actually, it was the bathtub scene. I think that was my favorite to write, was when Audrey gets surprised in the bathtub by a big burly lumberjack standing in her doorway. That was funny.
Oh, fantastic.
That is a great scene. And I would be okay with that myself.
Right. I mean, it's not the worst thing to ever happen to anyone.
Nope. That was hilarious. That was the one I think where I was like, well, damn it, now I gotta go clean up my screen before I read anymore, because that was so funny when I read that. I was like,
I think too, when I wrote it, that my initial idea was like, it just kept escalating in my head as I'm starting to write. I was thinking like, she's just changing, and then I was like, oh, what if she's like in a, what if she's like taking a shower? And then I was like, wait, what if she falls in the bathtub? Like, just kept getting for her. Yeah.
Yes. And then of course, Audrey. There's the dog. So she's got this Max. Wonderful dog, Max, who is just, he's the goodest boy. And
the goodest boy.
He's just such a fantastic part. Because, you know, we think about the little side characters, and sometimes it's a kid and sometimes it's the squirrels. And then we have Max, who's also a bit of a catalyst. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Is Max based on anybody?
Max is real. Max is 100% real. My assistant, Nikki, has a dog named Max, and that is his personality that you see in a Obsession Falls. She had been teasing me for a long time about writing Max into a book. And finally I was like, oh, it's happening. Max is going to be in a book. So now he's immortal. Max will never die because he lives forever in Tilikum.
Yes. I love that so much.
Yeah. And he is a really good dog. He's a super sweet dog, but he's just hilarious. Like he is really just silly.
He's just a derpy mutt. And we love those. Because yes. They just bring a lot of joy.
Exactly. Just all the joy.
So much joy.
So, Susie, mm-hmm. You had a follow-up question.
What was the most difficult part of Obsession Falls to write?
Figuring out how to make the ending believable. Because when you have a protective hero, and then you have a heroine who's going to be in danger, it's like, how did he let that happen? Like, how do you make it so it's not the hero failing in a way that you're going to lose the reader's trust in that character? You don't want him to be, you know, characters have to make mistakes. Like, we're all humans. And so even characters, they're supposed to be human beings. And so they make mistakes. And otherwise, the story would be super boring if they never did. But also, there's just, you have to really walk this line with a heroine in danger, because it has to be believable. You don't want her to be doing something completely stupid, because then readers are like, oh, she's too stupid to live. I hate this book. And you don't want the hero to just drop the ball and like suck as a hero, because then they're like, well, I hate him now. Figuring out all the like details of how to make that sort of ending sequence step-by-step work, that was probably the toughest part.
Yeah.
That actually, and just trying to start the book, because like I said, I was super stuck for a while. So that was the other thing that was really hard.
Sure. Sure. I know. Yeah, Ron, go ahead. Cause that was leading into there. Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to with this series? It's stepping more into the suspense. Is there mm-hmm. something you can tell us that isn't too spoilery?
I'm looking forward to, well, there's a brother who's missing, not missing, like missing persons missing, but there's a brother who's out of the picture. And I can admit to you, and I'll say this publicly, that I don't know why. I don't know why he's gone, and I don't know what he's doing.
The squirrels took him.
It's back here
in their tree. So there is a mysterious brother, and I actually don't know his story yet. I don't know what's going on with him. And I'm fine with admitting that. I'm looking forward to like figuring that out. And cause like, I don't know, the way that I talk about it sounds kind of woo woo, but my character's, you know, talking to me, and, nobody is telling me what's going on with him. So I don't know. But yeah, I'm also looking forward to kind of each, just the puzzle and the challenge of each suspense storyline. Like I can't not challenge myself. I can't, like, if it seems hard, I'm like, then I better do it. And then I whine about it a lot while I'm in it. But, there's a lot of fun in, you know, how do I make each book interesting and different from the one before it, and I don't know, it just, there's like this whole world of possibilities when it comes to adding some danger to each one, and they're all gonna be different, and that's really fun. And I have to say that I'm starting the third one now, and I'm just really excited. I won't say what, obviously, but I'm really excited because I found a way to flip things around a little bit in a way that, like, for the suspense thing, that I think readers by the third book, they're going to just think they have me figured out, and they're not. I'm so excited.
Keep them guessing. Keep us guessing. Yeah. I love that. There's something of a comfort to go from book to book and know what's going to happen. And there's something to say about not knowing and just being surprised when everything comes together. Because unlike the Baileys and the Miles, these are going to be interconnected standalones.
Yeah.
So people can read whatever they want. So there's going to be something intrinsic in each one that's a total wrap up. So lots of opportunities for surprises, because you don't have to follow a through story. You can just kind of have your individual plots.
Exactly. I know that. a lot of people are still, my readers are still kind of looking for like, oh, so what's the ongoing plot? Because they're so used to that in my small town series. I'm like, sorry guys, there isn't one this time. But I just wanted to do it a little differently.
Yeah, sure.
No, I think they lend to it also, where it's just the individual brothers and
just their story, what's going on with them. Yeah.
I love it.
So not so book based. We always have these questions where we're like, okay, so we just want to ask authors the random questions that are just the writery type, but not the booky type. So got a couple of those. Susie, you had a good one.
Do you have a favorite space to write your stories?
Yeah, and it varies. So sometimes I need a change of scenery. So I have an office where I usually work, but my teenage son lives in it right now because I had a plumbing disaster, and it's a long story, and it's finally getting fixed, and I think he gets to move back into his room next week. But so sometimes I work in my office even with his stuff in there, like he's at school during the day, and sometimes I work in my room. I have a chair, I'm sitting in it, and then sometimes I just will randomly like need to be somewhere else, and not usually in public. I don't usually, there have been a handful of times where to like jog my brain because I was really struggling, I've gone to like a coffee shop and just put on headphones and I write. And for some reason, like just it's like shocking change of scenery. Mm-hmm. I've sat in my car. I've sat outside on the porch. I mean, I've done all sorts of things because sometimes, you know, usually I work in my room or in my office. I have a little writing desk that I try to keep clear of things. So it's not like there's nothing for me to do except write. And then again, sometimes I find that sitting in my chair in my room is what works. And then there are those times where I'm just like, I can't be here. I have to anywhere but here. So I'm like at the dining table, like writing, and I don't do that very often, but I don't know.
I love it.
The brain is a weird thing.
To follow up.
This is my favorite.
Do you keep any snacks on handy when writing?
Sometimes. It's just, I'm not a huge snacker, but I do, I always have something to drink for sure. So either like my water bottle or like a sparkling water or coffee. That also tends to be my excuse to get up when I'm like, which is probably good because, you know, you need to get up and move around, right? It's probably not good for me to sit for hours and hours, but it's like, oh, I need a cappuccino.
That's me too.
Really need that cappuccino.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to have some tea. Tea is empty. I'll go make more tea. And then I'm like, is that three or is that four? What teas am I on? And if I start to shake, I'm like, oh, okay, that's four. The water.
Do you have a favorite trope to write, or one that you absolutely, I will never write this trope?
There's probably a lot of things I'll never write, quite honestly, like but I sort of don't like, I don't want to bag on anyone's thing. I won't write more than two people in a relationship. It's just not what I want to write. And I won't write where there's cheating between the hero and heroine. It's just not my jam. Stuff like that. I mean, I, even with going into the suspense a little bit, when it comes to like the sort of dark romance, it's just not really my, it's not really my brand. It's not really my thing. So I probably wouldn't venture into really dark stuff, like dark, really morally gray heroes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's just not where I'm at as a writer. And not because I wouldn't read it because I don't, it's not my thing as a writer.
You mentioned Grumpy Sunshine. Is that your favorite? Yeah.
I don't know that I have like one favorite. I do like coming back to the grumpy hero with the sunshine heroine. Like I don't think I'll ever totally get tired of it, but I couldn't write two of them in a row. You know, so that is kind of when it comes to figuring out like a series, I do kind of have to work with that a little bit, because I know that for me, if I'm coming off of writing something really specific, especially if I'm leaning hard into that, like Josiah is grumpy. He's very stoic, and Audrey is sunshine. You know, that I just went with it. I couldn't write really similar characters. I mean, I probably could. I just wouldn't want to. Mm-hmm. So even when something is some enjoyable for me, it's, I always have to do something different next, just to keep everything firing, I guess. Yeah, so there's definitely stuff I like. Like I do, yeah, I do like Grumpy Sunshine. I do like fake relationships. I do like enemies to lovers. You know, I like those things, but yeah, got to keep it fresh in my head. So.
And you do them really, really well. And sometimes they're all together, which is fantastic, blending the different tropes together.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
stack them. Yeah,
I love that. It gives the reader some variety too, because I think as a reader, I don't want to go from one book to the next book where everything's the same. I need a little bit of a shift. You know, I can come back to it. There can be some little zigzag, but I need a little bit of a shift. Otherwise, it's like, wait, didn't I just read this? It gets a little too static, too consistent. So
yeah, exactly.
Ron, you had questions. So,
if you could give a brand new indie author one piece of advice based on your experience, what would it be?
I think I would say two things. I would say one, just be you and write your book the way you want to write it. I mean, obviously there's things to think about when you're writing a book that you want people to read and you want people to buy. So you do need to think about your genre and your subgenre and what do you think readers want? That's a thing. But still, like, you are the only one who can tell a story the way you can tell it. You're the only one who's going to have your voice. So don't try to be someone else. Like, if you see someone else who is really successful, or maybe you just really like their books, like, don't look at that and say like, oh, I need to be like this. You need to be like you. And that's what's going to make you unique. That's what's going to help, you know, resonate. And the other thing I would say is, don't be in a hurry to release either your first book or your next book or whatever. Like, give yourself permission to slow down a little bit. This industry, there is a lot of pressure to move fast, to publish fast. I honestly don't know how much of a difference it really makes. I mean, it does make a difference to an extent. I mean, if you write a book and then 5 years later you write book two, obviously that's hard to market that. But I think that just because it's publishing is very accessible, which I love, huge fan, obviously. I think some really, really new authors are very quick to just like write a book. They're like, I've read a million books, I can write one. And they write a book and they let like one friend read it, and then they hire someone to like proofread it, and then they publish it. Now maybe that person is like a massive genius and you're a unicorn and that book is amazing. For most of us, our first book is not amazing. and like, it's okay, right? I mean we all learn and grow and we get better. Like, I even would look back at my earliest romances and I'm like, okay, but it's fine. But also, those weren't the first books I ever wrote. I've been writing for years, and I've had new authors reach out to me more than once, and they're like asking for some advice or whatever. And I look at their first, you know, they have a couple books out, and they have a lot of reviews that say things like, it's not bad for a debut. It's like, oh, okay. Awesome that you wrote a book. Like, huge. That's so cool. Yeah. 'Cause so many people say they want to write a book and never do it. But slow down, pump the brakes, take your time. Yeah. You know, that book that you wrote, it might need to sit for a little while you write something else. And then you might go back to it and be like, oh, I can see 10 ways to make this book better. Because if you're starting from a place of like, well, this book is just okay, it's hard to gain traction that way. It's hard to build a career on books that are just okay. And like, I don't say that to be discouraging to anyone. I just, you know, I want to be like super rah, rah, go you, because you wrote a book for real. But that's just the reality of it. We need time to develop our craft. It is a craft. It takes work. And just having read a lot of books is a great start, but that doesn't mean that you know exactly how to put together a really satisfying story. Mm-hmm. Does it have to be perfect? No, it does not. None of my books are perfect. So, you know, that's another extreme. You don't want to get caught up in that either, where you never publish anything or you never finish everything because it's not perfect. But, you know, I think a little patience, a little bit more kind of diligence would serve a lot of really new authors well, because it's going to give you a stronger starting point to start your career and build a readership who doesn't just like your book, who loves your book.
Right. I agree. I think there's a lot to be said for not letting the only person to proofread your book be someone who loves you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. No, it's so true. It is so true. Absolutely. Like, yeah. And that's hard. I had a reader, a writer, a new writer, I'm not sure if they had anything published or not, ask me in a writing group on Facebook, ask me, like, how do I deal with getting beta feedback? I think I had maybe just gotten beta feedback on a book. And so I was kind of in that space. And she was like, well, how do you deal with it? Like, you know, she was saying, you know, she just got a bunch of feedback on her book and she's devastated. She's so upset by it. And I was like, I get it. Totally feel that. It's hard. It's really hard to get feedback. For me, I know it takes me a couple days to open the document. Like, I get beta feedback and it's not that I'm going to be devastated by it, even if it's critical. It's just that it's hard. And so I totally get that. And also, if you're going to be a writer, you got to learn to embrace that suck. And just deal with it, you know, somehow. Like, you got to figure that out because it's part of the deal. Because once your book is out there in the world, lots of people are going to rip it to shreds and say really bad things about it and you. And you don't have to look at that stuff. You don't have to let that into your space, but it's going to happen. So you got to grow some thicker skin, you know, you just do.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Julie, I know you're like, look, you were just, you keep looking like you're going to say something. Say it.
No, I just typed embrace the suck and was typing care quickly because it'll probably end up in a graphic somewhere. Sorry, it's what I do.
Make sure you credit her.
Yes. Well, that's why I was typing her name.
But it's so true. And I would rather have an author get feedback from people who care about them and want them to succeed than their first feedback come from reviews once the book is out there, from people who don't have the same genuine interest, who don't have the same the word just flew right out of my head, but they're not as invested. They're not invested in it doing well because they don't have a connection. I love that. And it's like you said, everybody wants they're all excited about publishing their book. And indie publishing, self-publishing has made it very easy to put your book out there. But there's so much that goes into writing a book that's not putting words on the page.
And I think that some people see kind of what's happening. They see the social media version of authors who are chatting with readers and they're releasing books and people are like posting screenshots of the rank and it's all this sort of fun, festive, feels very fun and festive. And what you're seeing is you're not seeing everything that went into that. You're not seeing all of the hard work that went into that. You're not seeing the rewrites and the revisions and the editing and, you know, going. I mean, I actually got really difficult beta feedback on Obsession Falls. It was sometimes my draft that goes to beta readers is really solid. Like, I've written enough books, I've done this enough times. Sometimes I get it. Not that they don't have anything critical to say, they do, but sometimes it's just really like a lot of small stuff. Obsession Falls, they had big problems with it, and they were right. Yeah. And that was just like, okay, you know, how am I going to deal with this? But without that, man, what, you know, what would I be putting out there? And so new writers don't often see that. And they also don't see kind of the reality of just how the market is very crowded. Yeah. It's very competitive. I mean, there's room for, I don't look at other authors like as my competition, not in a adversarial sort of way, but it is a very competitive space. Romance is a huge genre, so there's huge potential. There's lots of readers and readers who read a lot, which is so great, but it also can be very hard to be seen. And so in order to stand out, I think the quality just has to be there. I think there are, when I was starting out, there were definitely voices in the industry that kind of would argue with that. And I don't know, I can't even think of who that was. I'm not calling anyone out or anything like that, but I remember hearing people who would assert that, like, well, it doesn't really matter if the book is that good, you just have to get enough eyes on it. And I think maybe for some of them for a while that was kind of true, because there wasn't a lot of competition early on, and when self-publishing kind of became a more viable option. But now I just don't think that's true anymore, if it ever was. I think to build a really sustainable career, like, the quality has to be there. You have to get certain things right, because if readers have too many options, if they read your book, and it's awesome, and it also means that if readers read your book and they're like, they're not going to read your backlist, they're not going to read your next one. You have to deliver something that's a little bit special.
Absolutely.
And we keep saying there's no new stories, just new ways to tell them. So the way you tell the story had better grab someone and pull them in, because if not, they'll find the same story written by someone else that has what they're looking for. And that's where they're going to go. And you're right. It's becoming a crowded market. It's becoming a competitive situation. As far as how many books are out there, how many authors are out there, how many readers are out there. We're looking for something that's savvy and deep and brings emotional depth and feeling to it, with strong characters that we can relate to or associate with or strive to be, or know that they are so far in the realm of fantasy that it just makes it so beautiful to dive into their world, because it's not our world. So
absolutely.
I love that advice. God, I love that advice, especially the new writer.
And it's so real. Like, your advice is real. It's what I tell new or wannabe authors is, you have to get that first book right. Pay the money. Do not publish a book that has not been through all the steps.
Part of my job is to read debuts, and I read a ton of them, and that's 100% exactly what I would say to about 50% of the authors I read. Just take a beat. Let somebody else take it. Let somebody that's not your best friend read it.
And please run it through an editor. I know editors are not cheap. I get it. But please, new authors, please run your books through an editor. And I know that's kind of self-serving for whatever, you know, because I do edit, but at the same time, it's like,
No, it's 100% true. It really, really is. And if authors are hearing from people out there in author groups or anywhere, wherever people are getting off, you know, new author advice, if anyone is saying that it doesn't matter and readers don't care, they're wrong.
They're wrong.
Really wrong.
Readers do care. And like I said, it's just too easy for readers to find something else to read.
That's right.
So you got to get it right. And, you know, for like new authors, like, if there's a new author out there who's got a couple books out and maybe they, you know, could have been better and the reviews are a little mediocre, like, they're okay, but they're not the best. like, don't lose heart, you know, don't feel like, oh, I messed up and I can never move on from this. Well, of course you can. But just, you know, like I said, pump the brakes a little bit, just take your time, really learn your craft. And sometimes the hard things, like getting feedback that's difficult, is what makes you so much better. Like, you just, you learn, that's how you learn. I mean, if we don't, if we aren't challenged and if we aren't called out when we, you know, mess something up or don't, something doesn't come across the way we meant it or whatever, like we don't, we never get better. And we will, you know, we all want to get better. At least I hope so. I do. So
good authors want to grow. And that's, I love seeing a new author go from their first book where I'm kind of like, okay, this is good. We've got something to work here. And then I get to their third and their fourth book and I'm like, damn, like, you look at the level ups. It's like, this is going. Awesome. And holy crap, they leveled up and then they do it again. I love watching that. So
Super
you start, everybody starts somewhere and then you build. So, okay. So what's next? Because you're continuing to write, you're continuing to do the thing, to expand the craft. What's next for Claire Kingsley?
So I have, I'll have a book coming out in probably in the spring. I don't have a specific date yet for a variety of boring business reasons. but that one will be going to audio production soon, which is super exciting. So yeah, more books in the Haven Brothers series, more small town romantic suspense. And like I said, I'm just in the beginning stages of starting another one that'll come out later next year. And I'm sort of at that phase where I have no idea how to write this book because it's not something I've ever done before. And it's got some just things about it that will make the pacing different and interesting. And different and interesting means I'm going to complain a lot to the people I complain to because I'm gonna be like, I don't know how to do it. And they are just very patient with me and just, okay, Claire, every time. So anyway,
it's just 26 letters. Just mess them up.
Right.
I know. But shake them up in a jar, spill them out on the table. It's fine.
Do what comes up. Fine. Yes. But it's so important to have that team, though. I love that you have that team where you can sit and say, all right, this just isn't, somebody's just insert something in my head, put something in a brain, send me a picture of something, or let's sit and let's workshop it and figure out what the hell's going on here. That team is so important. It really is.
It's vital. I know people ask me a lot, like often I get asked when I'm interviewed, like, where do you get your ideas? And my first answer is like, in my brain, in here. But I mean, really a lot of it's true. A lot of it though is brainstorming with my team, because I can go to them and just be like I did the other day. I was like, okay, you guys, I don't even know how to start this book. I don't even know what's happening. I don't know what to do with it. Here's what I know. And I might list it all, you know, here are the things that I'm working with. This is where I'm starting. Just give me ideas for anything. Like, I don't even care if it's something that would be at the end or in the middle or whatever. Like, what kind of things are you know, what's coming to mind? Anything goes. And they'll just start throwing stuff at me. And then I'm sure I annoy the crap out of them, because I'm like, no. What about this? No. What about this? No. But sometimes my no's turn into yeses, or sometimes their ideas, they're just random. Like, what if there was a thing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, but what if it wasn't that, but it was this? And they're like, that's not the same at all. And I'm like, I know, but it made me think though. So it's
kind of,
it's oftentimes just something for you or the author to springboard off of, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's important. So I love it.
It is. It is. Yeah. And that's actually I think that's probably my favorite part. My reading through the last read through is probably my absolute favorite part, because I love reading the finished product and just being like, yes, did it. But brainstorming anything, whether it's my book or with, so for someone else's book, I don't even care. I love brainstorming ideas. It's like, because you don't have to worry about how to make them work yet. You can just be like, oh yeah,
what ifs are fun.
It's fun.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because what ifs
are very fun.
It's throwing, you know, enough spaghetti at the wall that something's going to stick, and you never know eventually. what the what the squirrel moment is going to be, where you're on a path and all of a sudden somebody says something and you're like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That might not have been where you were headed, but it caught your eye over there. So I love that.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to do, because, oh my gosh, we've been doing this for a bit. Thank you for staying with us for so long. We're like all over the place. We've got this speed route. This is super fun. This or that. You don't have to think too hard. Just, you know, it is literally a this or that. And it's like some bookish, some not bookish, just kind of fun things. We're going to run through them. Julie, you're starting.
There is a right answer on this one.
No, there's not.
No pressure. It's fine.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee, 100%, always.
See, you got it right. Bad haircut or bad hair dye?
Haircut.
Hard rock or country?
Hard rock.
Okay. Beach or mountain vacation?
Beach. That's a hard one, though, because I like both.
Plan ahead or live in the moment?
I live in the moment.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Cookies or cake?
Cookies.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Draft or edit?
I mean, neither.
You like to read the finished product.
I'm
just kidding. I don't know. They're both hard.
They are hard.
Finished product. There we go. We're finished product. Yeah. All right. Are you a Kindle or a paperback person?
It depends. Yeah, it just depends.
Yeah. It's harder to bring 30 paperbacks on a trip with me. The Kindle's much easier. And
yeah.
Then I go and
buy, liner.
Then I go to buy a bunch of books and someone has to ship them home to me, Julie.
Yeah.
I went to this last event. I wasn't supposed to buy anything. Yeah, Julie's got a box of books to send home to me, a box of paperbacks. Oops, best laid plans. Didn't exactly happen. So, Claire, thank you so, so much for all of your time, for the wisdom, for the details, for the fun, the laughs. And we really appreciate you coming on with us and hanging out with us and answering all the things, because we threw a lot at you.
We did it.
So for everybody, if you don't know Claire, go find just read all the things, everything. Obsession Falls is the new one, just came out. The audio is fantastic. If you're an audiobook person, we are loving the audiobook for Obsession Falls. It's fantastic.
Turned out so good. I'm really happy with how they did.
I'm going to ask a follow-up question. Did you get to choose your narrators for it?
I do choose my narrators, sort of. I mean, yes and no. I have help. So I work with an audio producer. And often what dictates, I have to work with their availability a little bit. So, you know, I might have like a few narrators in mind, and then the one who I hire is the one who is available. But yeah, I ultimately have final say on that. So yeah.
Nice.
Well done. They're perfect. Absolutely perfect. So awesome. Yeah. Claire, thank you again so, so, so much for being here, for hanging out with us, for chatting with us. And hang tight for just a second after we log off, and we'll chat a little offline,
because that's something we get to do. But
for everybody else watching, thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you, Claire.
Bye. Thank you.